chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm really happy to be back with you Monday night. We had a great show last night, too. Me and SM Gibson here live in the studio, and as you probably know, SM Gibson does the shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, so we've been teaming up Monday through Thursday while he's here in town. I don't know how long he's going to be here, but for the time being, we're going to be teaming up every night, Monday through Thursday, bringing you some crazy anti-media radio shows, and last night was fireworks. Monday night was great. Tonight is sure to be another, you know, at least entertaining show. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about, some crazy news. Some real sci-fi kind of stuff that's going on as well that we're going to be trying to break into here. And, you know, we're going to have to see where this thing goes. We got some election news. We got Jeb Bush imploding. I mean, this is some hilarious stuff that we covered today on the anti-media as well. Anyway, I want to introduce SM Gibson. What's up, man?
What's up? What's going on? Got a lot of robots to talk about, politicians and actual robots included.
Bunch of robots, politicians, and assholes. Sooner or later, we're all going to have one. And I guess, you know, we all got smartphones. That's kind of like having a basics of robotics, but this stuff is quickly going to be taking over and moving more and more into our personal lives. People now have like these smart watches. Most people have a smartphone, all this, you know, all this stuff, you know, there's no telling the limits of what it's going to be. You know, how far is technology going to get into our very intimate lives?
Have you heard about the people wearing the Fitbits while they have sex? Have you heard about that?
No. Are they trying to track their exercise?
That's it. They're trying to figure out how many calories they're burning while they have sex.
Shit, that's not too bad an idea. But, you know, again, the Fitbit data goes up into corporate Fitbit, and that data can, you know, depending on the user agreement, I haven't read the privacy policy for Fitbit, but, you know, there's a chance that that data is being repackaged and resold to marketing corporations. You know, who knows? I mean, that's what they do with a lot of this data, and that's where Google makes a lot of its money, and Facebook and all these data mining corporations that, you know, all these apps and stuff that we use, they mine the data, use that personal information to sell you products and sell you whatever, dude. They use it for a bunch of different stuff. No, you know, who knows what it's actually used for. Anyway, we're also joined tonight by our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Hey, Nick, not a whole lot, man. Hey, it's interesting to see the rise of the machines, but on a microcosm, right?
It is, man. It really is. You know, we're going to have to wait and see how this thing turns out. I mean, in the trajectory that we're in, it's not looking bright. We're going to get into that a little bit later on the show. We've got a couple articles on the anti-media today that we're going to be talking about. We're getting some callers in from, looks like, 760 San Diego area. If you call in, I had to hang up on you, but call back, but make sure you keep your microphone on mute while you wait for us to get to you. If you do call in, we'll get to you based on your area code. The call-in number is 718-717-8296, and we're probably going to get a bunch of calls tonight, and we'll try to get to you in order. So if you call in, just be patient with us. We'll get to you when we have a chance. Also joining us tonight is we have two special co-hosts with us that are have become pretty much a permanent part of our show. We've got Jake Anderson on the line. What's up, Jake?
Not a whole lot, man. Just trying to keep up with the super delegate count with Bernie Sanders. And he could still do it. It could happen. I was telling you earlier, I think I'd love to see the Democratic Party screw Bernie and the Republican Party screw Trump right at the same time and just watch the chaos unfold.
Yeah, you know, then that would be a very interesting prospect, and that very well may likely be what happens. Thanks for bringing that up. We are going to get into this election stuff first. And on that note, I want to introduce our other special co-host, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, hanging in there. You know, we enjoyed a nice week of weather until today. I went out for a bike ride and it started raining.
Oh, yeah. I saw.
I don't even want to hear it.
I saw clouds. It was so horrible.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about that. Come on now.
Oh, man. So I forgot to put the link to our show outline up, but I'm going to put that over on the Facebook page with the promo. With the show promo meme, which is about Kanye West and how that is making like headline news about how Kanye is $58 million in debt. Don't ask me how he's done it. I mean, unfortunately for a lot of these celebrities, you know, they're not very good managing their money and stuff. Some of them are. I saw today that Shaq was actually one of the early investors in Google. And so I'm sure that paid off pretty handsomely for him. But obviously, Kanye is supposedly in a lot of debt, and recently 50 Cent as well.
50 Cent is not in debt. It was about Rick Ross. That's all that's about.
Okay.
These fools keep funding their own music videos.
Yeah, apparently. But, you know, the thing is that they're not being very good with their money. And somehow this Kanye tweeted out that he's $58 million in debt. And I like, why is this like national headlines? I mean, this is just some guy that's in debt. I mean, okay, good for him. Our show promo tonight talks about how, you know, that's one thing, but then at the same on the same token, the average U.S. citizen is born into a shitload of debt. I mean, when you have a kid, they're burdened with something like $60,000 in debt at this point, and it's due to the massive. Financial system, the military industrial complex, the empire that we're all paying for, that's part of it. All the you know, Social Security that's been bankrupted thanks to a lot of the foreign policy. I guess a lot of it goes back to foreign policy.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, I guess you could say for some people, you know, Halliburton, it's worth it for them. All these guys that make the drones and they make the jets. You know, it's good for them, I guess.
It's so cool that we're part of this huge, massive war empire. It's really something to be proud of.
It's sweet. Yeah. We get all the spoils of those conflicts too.
Oh yeah. Oh, except we don't. That's the problem. And actually, we were talking about that last night on SM Gibson's show. Is that how you know, the foreign policy in the United States? It's socialism for the taxpayer, right? We're all paying for this stuff through our taxes. We're all financing it, bankrolling it. And then when they can't pay for it, well, then it turns into this debt that we're talking about here on the show promo. This Federal Reserve money, they print the money out. They give it to the military-industrial complex. Someone's got to pay it back. Unfortunately, every U.S. citizen who has a Social Security number is kind of hooked on the line for that. That's the collateral, is our Social Security number. We all got to pay for that stuff.
Let's make Mexico pay for it.
Yeah, it's not, yeah. Elect Trump, and he'll make Mexico pay for our empire somehow.
Okay, I tell you what. It's been brought up, and I know it's on the tip of Claire's tongue. It's on the tip of my tongue, and DB, and I know he's heard about it too. Donald Trump, Saudi Arabia 9/11. Donald Trump said...
He went there, yeah.
Donald Trump said that Saudi Arabia was behind 9/11.
That was today, right? Yes. Yeah, that was a very interesting comment, and that's something that it. I mean, it's already kind of like,
well, it's common
It's common knowledge if you look at the hijackers. How many? What were the hijackers?
15 and 19 hijackers for Saudi Arabia, and we know that the funding went through. There's 28 pages sitting in Congress right now that points the blame directly on them. I'm not totally convinced also that there's not some implication on Israel as well inside
so
of that.
So 15 of the 19 supposed 9/11 hijackers were Saudi Arabian.
Well, there were 19 people that were implicated in this crime.
Yeah, and almost all of them were Saudis.
15 of the 19 were Saudis.
And you know, that's funny. And again, like, we...
And we bombed Iraq.
We've been the biggest critics of Trump.
You know how many, wait, you know how many of those hijackers were Iraqi?
None.
Zero.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and we've been the biggest critics of Trump here on the anti-media. And by all means, I do not like the majority of the stuff that Trump says. In fact, I think he has the most dangerous rhetoric. Some of the most dangerous rhetoric out there.
I won't say
with all
the most, but some of the.
Yeah, I think Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio are even more dangerous because they're
Cruz,
more slick
Rubio,
with it.
Hillary.
But, you know, I think Trump has some really dangerous xenophobic rhetoric,
yes.
Anti-immigrant, minority rhetoric that is really
much.
Dangerous. But, you know, on the same token, you know, you got him out here saying, look, why did we go and overthrow Iraq when most of the hijackers were Saudi Arabian? And then he even invoked... I'm guessing what he was talking about, the secret papers that may implicate the Saudis, he's probably talking about those 28 pages of the 9/11 report that is in Congress trying to get declassified.
Well, I have screamed and screamed and screamed, and Claire's heard it on my radio show, talking about 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis and we invaded Iraq. Like, this is common sense, people. This isn't like some conspiracy. This is a conspiracy hour. This is right in front of your face. Why can't we address this?
But not only that, but I mean, think of all the like human rights abuses and everything else that we excuse with Saudi Arabia. I mean,
sure.
This seems fairly obvious.
You know what's interesting also is that, well, this actually harkens to the point of whether anyone's calling anyone out. Kasich earlier actually made an interesting point on Clinton. I'm always wondering why they're always, you know, banging on Hillary for Benghazi, but they never bring up the fact that we deposed Gaddafi and completely destabilized Libya. And Kasich actually brought that up earlier. It blew my mind.
Yeah, it's always interesting when a Republican talks badly about regime change. I mean, that's like,
right.
You know, that's like part of their party platform. And then they...
Well, the weird thing about Libya, too, that I always found interesting, and maybe you can expound upon this, Jake, is how at the time, when Gaddafi was taken out, you know, oh, we had nothing to do with that. We had no part in that. It was just some, you know, insurgency with inside the country. You know, it's the rebellion. They want freedom. That's
yeah.
All this is about. They want freedom. We were, and now that they're running for president, Hillary's like, I did that. That
yeah,
happened.
Exactly.
I
and,
made that happen.
And, you know, it comes along with this partisan, you know, just chess match stuff, because I got some personal insight here into what's possibly going on here with why the Republicans are all of a sudden concerned about why we overthrew Gaddafi. Well, the simple answer, well, because Obama was the president. If Bush would have done it, they'd be out there apologizing for it or saying it was protecting freedom. But since it was a Democrat, literally the only reason why I think most of these Republicans are willing to even mention Gaddafi or Iraq here now with Trump.
It depends on the candidate, because you have multiple candidates, as we saw tonight. I don't know for anybody that was unfortunate enough to see some of the town hall debates from South Carolina tonight. You had Rubio and Cruz talking about, well, our military, like they're so small. We're going to rebuild the military. We're going to, like, grow the complex even bigger.
Yeah, our military, that's what, 3 times larger than all other countries combined or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. It's like as if we don't have a military. It's like, judging by what they're talking about, we don't even have a military. It's like we need to build that thing up.
It's like saying that Frankenstein needs to be at least 10 times bigger than what he is now, you know, like. Make Frankenstein, and then he's not big enough. He needs to be the size of Godzilla.
I want to give a shout-out real quick tonight for the town hall, and clearly anybody that's ever listened to me knows that I'm supporting zero candidate, but I would like to congratulate at least Ben Carson brought up the fact tonight that we live in a world where we have 5% of the population, 25% of the world's prison population.
That's a fact that most people don't even know.
I know. You know? And I think that's a very important
anytime, statistic. And Bernie Sanders has also brought that up very prominently, and I applaud him. Anyone that does that on national TV, you got to give him props for
exactly.
that. No matter how much,
saying, well done, Ben Carson.
Exactly. And that. No matter how much crazy shit they say, how much you disagree with them, whenever they say stuff like that, it's a positive. And just like when Trump is out there saying, you know, that they lied to get us into Iraq, I mean, that's something that we that needs to get out there. More people need to hear about that stuff because, you know, it's, these facts aren't well known because the media, they did all they sure as hell covered Iraq and Libya up and leading into the fight. You know, and Gaddafi was demonized to the max before he went overthrew the government. But we don't hear nothing about what happens afterwards, right? And now Libya is a failed state. Libya is in the midst of a civil war with like 12 or more different factions fighting.
No, you're wrong, Nick. ISIS is they're taking over Libya. And you know what? We should probably go ahead and get over there real
well
quick.
That's now become the new narrative. It's like now we need to go back.
Right.
You know, and we should have never gone there to begin with. Right. You know what I mean? And it's the same exact thing in Iraq. We've been to Iraq three times now.
But the thing about Libya that blows my mind, at least with Iraq, they said we invaded Iraq. We went into Iraq. With Libya, they're like, we weren't there. We don't know what you're talking about. And now, you know, they take credit for it, but they didn't. Like, it's so covert. And people just play it off like this stuff never happened. It's crazy.
So
short-term selective memory is stunning.
Exactly. And I want to make a quick point here before we go to Claire, because Claire covered some of these comments by Trump in the last debate, and some surprising people are now coming out and like applauding him for what he said. First, I want to go to this little anecdotal experience I had here, because, you know, here at the Anti-Media, before the website was going and all that stuff, we were a Facebook page that every now and then we did some good things, and we definitely helped put a halt on the regime change agenda in Syria back in, 2013, I think it was. I mean, we made a bunch of memes mostly and organized a global anti-war protest that continued on for weeks. And, you know, we helped start that up, and it really, I think it did prevent the direct regime change in Syria, which is what they were trying to do, which would have basically created what's going on in Libya now. But what I did notice when I was out there organizing these events here in San Diego locally, purely because of the fact that it was Obama that was in charge and Hillary Clinton that was in charge of this regime change in Syria, we had people that were Republicans out there protesting the war. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, we had Republicans, we had people from the Tea Party out there protesting against the war. Right. I mean, albeit they were misled, they were like, "Oh, well, Obama's a Muslim, we can't let him do this." It's like, okay, no, you're going too far.
Genuine,
but at least,
question: Do you think that was legitimately from the establishment of the Republican Party, or do you think that was more from the Ron Paul Justin?
No. There was definitely some like establishment type, Tea Party type people out there that were Republicans that were against the war in Syria in 2013.
Just based purely on political.
In the most part because it was Obama. Now, if it had been a Republican doing it, it would have been huge. And it's very similar to the way that now the mainstream Democrats.
Well, the Democrats
though. Now, mainstream Democrats are pretty much the pro-war party. It's like, well, Obama's pretty much, you know, dropped 2,300 bombs in Muslim-majority countries in 2015 alone.
That's what scares me about
Obama. America. Has initiated Obama has initiated seven new wars in Muslim countries since he's been in office.
He's a Muslim.
And now the Democrats, and all these crazy Republicans think he's a Muslim somehow, but he's bombing seven Muslim countries. You know, it's like all of a sudden, it's like now the Democratic establishment is like the pro-war party, and that's why you have Hillary Clinton out there running with the most hawkish campaign in the entire race outside of maybe Marco Rubio.
You have to applaud her at how hawkish she is. Like, it is pretty impressive. Like, the Democrats were like the doves. I don't want to go to war. It's like, I don't care. I'll fight anybody.
Yeah, pretty much. I just want to remind, we have a couple callers on the line. I want to remind you guys to keep your microphone on mute. And when we're ready to bring you in, we're going to go to you by your area code. We're going to get to you guys in a few minutes. First, I want to go over to Claire, because Claire covered a story on the Anti-Media this morning regarding some of this. You know, anyone familiar with the last Republican debate, the comments we're referencing here is when Trump basically repeatedly called Bush a liar for what he did to get us into Iraq, and he also dragged Jeb Bush through the mud in this. And you know, now Trump is getting applauded, not only and surprisingly from us right now.
I'm telling you right now,
for what he, and I disagree with a lot of the most of the stuff he says, but on this he was right. And now he's getting also praise from some very, very unlikely groups. Claire, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, he's actually getting praise from one of the far-left groups, Code Pink. That's an anti-war activist group that's been around for a very long time. And
this is the same group that tried to do a citizen's arrest on Henry Kissinger.
Right, exactly. And they're praising him for calling the Iraq War a big, fat mistake and calling out the lies that got us into that whole mess there. I mean, they were gushing over what Trump said, which, you know, and I hesitate to applaud anything that Trump does as well. But, I mean, you can't deny how important it is for somebody who has this much attention to actually call, you know, drop a truth bomb like this. I think it's incredibly important.
I mean, he has the biggest microphone in the world right now. And for all the crazy, crazy stuff that comes out of that man's mouth, the fact that he's sitting there on stage, the largest televised debate in the history of the United States, more people are watching that than any debate ever, and he's going, your brother calls that, Jeb. Your brother's the reason that happened. Your brother was there. And now today he's saying the Saudis were involved. Like, I don't even know what to think.
Yeah, it's
right.
It's,
exactly.
It's crazy. It is.
Release the 28.
There yep. you go, man. DB, what do you think about this?
I think they're getting ready, man. I think actually, like I've kind of tried to allude to over the past, that I think there's two factions in the U.S. really, if you think about it, the military and the banking system. And I think for a long time, the banking system would pretty much had run a coup. And I think they've been counter-coup, dude. I think they've been retaken over by the military, to be honest.
Interesting.
And I think Trump's their guy. I really do.
Interesting interesting theory. Jake, what do you think? After you, I'm going to bring in some callers. What do you think about this?
I think it's very possible that this is going to – this could be Trump's downfall. I mean, I think they're setting him up for, you know – I think they're going to take him out for this, honestly. Like, it's like – he just, I mean, it's awesome that he's doing this, but, you know, the Republican establishment is furious at him right now, and they're still pushing to get the establishment figure higher. They won't give up. You know, the South Carolina governor came out, and she endorsed Marco Rubio. I'm sure the Republican establishment encouraged that because it was not politically advantageous for her to do so, because Rubio's not going to win South Carolina.
Nikki Haley's a company man.
They clearly just want him to move up, and they're going to keep pushing him, and they're going to keep tearing Cruz and Trump down until they can broker the convention in a way that's not too detrimental.
Too unpopular, right?
No, I do feel that Cruz is part of the establishment. Like, I think he's like in there with them. Like, I think.
I agree. They're all part of the establishment. Trump just has a big mouth.
I can't figure Trump out. Like, honest to God, I can't figure him out. Like, is he of the establishment? Is he just a lunatic with an ego? Like,
even if he's not, they can shut his bank account off. You know what I mean?
And, you know, one of my favorite former Republicans, and again, I don't even consider myself an independent. I'm a non-voter, and I don't play this party game or anything like that. My favorite former Republican, Ron Paul, man, principled guy, and I look at Bernie Sanders as like the Ron Paul of the left in many ways, not in every way, but you know, one thing Ron Paul said was that being anti-establishment doesn't mean you're for freedom or that you're gonna do good for the country. I mean, just because Trump is like, you know, I really do think he is a thorn in the side of the establishment. Does not mean he's going to have good policies or anything good at all.
He just wants to be the establishment.
I mean, let's just leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? I want to bring
that's a great point, Nick, and I think that's a great point to make, because I tell you, the more this is going on, I'm really convinced. Like, at first I thought this was a ploy and Trump was just, you know, he was part of the game, and like, I really am starting to believe he is completely anti-establishment. I'm so glad Nick said that. Just because you're anti-establishment doesn't mean, oh, well, that's good. Let's vote for this guy. I mean, Hitler was anti-establishment, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I was going to go to our caller from San Diego. They just dropped. But we do have another caller on the line from the 612 area code. I'm not sure what area that's at. But anyway, you're on the line live with the anti-media. What do you make of this whole election thing? What do you think of, you know, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, you know, Marco Rubio? What do you make of all this stuff? 612, go ahead. 612 is being dropped from the call. Unfortunately, if you don't speak up, we can't get to you. Anyway, anyone else wanting to join the call tonight, the call-in number is 718-717-8296. All we ask is that you keep your microphone muted and your radio off in the background while you're on the call. When we're ready for you, we'll go to you by your area code, and then you'll be live on the line, and you know the rest is history from there. But yeah, I mean, this election stuff has been, you know, pretty interesting. I think we got 612 back. How's it going? You there? Okay, 612 is not talking. So, caller from 612, you can just continue listening on ucy.tv/TAMR. And, you know, you can listen on that way. You can't listen on phone call.
Hey, Nick, and another quick point is that with this lawsuit stuff that Trump's throwing around, we're also seeing that, if the Republicans, if the establishment really, you know, tries some smelly stuff with him, boy, I mean, that could be the trial of the century talking, you know, like, I mean, if he has the legal resources to really take it to town. I mean, if they tried something too nefarious with him, I think he would take them to court and make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, that's another interesting prospect. And he's also thrown, in the last few days, he's thrown around that third party run.
Right. As far as the theater goes, the theater of it and not controlling my life or having any policy and not, you know, the theater of it, I think what Trump's doing right now is good for the country. I hate this garbage coming out of his mouth of this divisiveness and this you're this religion or you're this ethnicity. That's ridiculous. But
yeah, I agree with you, man.
But
I think
something good coming out of this.
I think both with him and Sanders, regardless of whether they lose or not, they're splintering these parties and showing them for what they are. You know, they're showing the oligarchy that's going on.
Exactly, man. And I think Bernie Sanders, even more than Trump, is exposing how undemocratic our quote unquote democratic republic is. Especially coming out of,
I felt like I went through that with Ron, though.
Coming out of Iowa with the very questionable outcome there, and then in New Hampshire, I mean, that's blatant. Hillary Clinton walked away with pretty much the win because she has the superdelegates, and Bernie Sanders won by one of the largest margins ever in New Hampshire, and he didn't walk away with the win. Technically speaking, I mean, he walked away with the same amount, if not less, delegates than Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's a huge deal. We got the primaries or the caucuses coming up. I think South Carolina is the Republican primary coming up on the 20th, which I think is Saturday. And then you got the Democratic caucus, which is coming up in Nevada on the 20th as well. So those are things that we're going to be keeping an eye on here in the anti-media. It looks like Sanders has a really good chance of winning Nevada. It looks like Trump's probably going to win South Carolina in a landslide. We're going to have to keep an eye on that and see how that turns out.
Well,
I'll
tell you what, speaking of polls in the media, I want to bring this up. There was a poll that came out today that showed that Donald Trump had taken a 20-point lead nationally over his Republican competitors. The exact same day, the Wall Street Journal and NBC released a poll that said Ted Cruz had overtaken him and was now winning by 2%.
I saw that, man. That's
so you're talking.
Yeah, but
Ted Cruz.
When were they taken, though? When were they? Because the Quinnipiac poll was taken from like February 2nd to the 4th or something like that. So it's a bit. It's quite a delay.
Yeah, these polls are so. Who knows what the hell's going on with these polls, man? I mean, they're nefarious to say the least.
Well, let's face it. They're polls for people that answer the damn home line phone. Who's that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to wonder who's being polled here.
Well, see,
the sample size and all that.
I think that's negligible too. I mean, because they supposedly in Iowa, when they did a cell phone poll, Rand Paul came in first because it was the younger generation, and look at how that turned out. You know, so
yeah. You know, who's going to vote?
Right.
I think. There is a legitimate youth voting bloc on the Democratic side. I think Bernie Sanders is legitimately igniting a youth voting bloc over there on the Democratic end of things. I think on the Republican side, that they've lost the youth a long time ago. There's just none left. I mean, the only faction that was there was for Rand Paul, and he's dropped out. Those people are probably not going to vote. Half of them are probably going to become anarchists, and the other half, maybe they support Cruz, but it's negligible. Cruz has no chance of winning anyway. Now, final point here before we move on from this election stuff. Claire, you got a brilliant article today on the anti-media about Jeb Bush. And it's titled "Jeb Bush's Presidential Campaign is Imploding in the Most Hilarious."
I don't want to hear a negative word about this American treasure, Claire, by the way, before you even start talking.
"Jeb Bush's presidential campaign is imploding in the most hilarious way possible." man, this article is one of my favorite articles so far this month, and I don't know, maybe probably this year. I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, you know, Bush has that connotation that comes along with his name. You know, Jeb, you know, he's the brother of George W. Bush. He's the son of Bush Sr., two presidents that are have pretty bad reputations. So to see Bush crumble the way he is, to see him just completely collapse and to see him fail, I mean, to me, I sit back and I watch the dumb shit that he's been doing, and I laugh and I find entertainment in it, because I like to see a guy that comes from a family that has so many bad. I mean, and even Prescott Bush, Bush Sr.'s dad. I mean, this guy was implicated in helping the Nazis. I mean, this family has just had a really bad track record in American politics, and now to see the latest incarnation of the Trump of the Bush family, you know, crumbling the way he is, I sit back and I laugh. Claire, tell us a little bit about this article.
Well, I mean, his campaign really is imploding. I mean, he's spending more money than any other candidate by far. I mean, like $5,000 per vote in, I don't remember, Iowa or New Hampshire or something. And
it was only $1,200 per vote in New Hampshire. Give him a break.
No. That's including the super PAC. Without including the super PAC, like of his own money, that's how much
like
it would
Cruz,
amount
to. Spent $40 a vote. Jeb Bush spent $1,200. Whatever. Give Jeb a break. He's got an exclamation point after his name.
I know. I do love that. So, but still. So he for some reason, and really nobody can quite figure it out, he tweeted a picture of his gun that is engraved with Governor Jeb Bush, and all he said on this tweet was "America," period, and that was it. And of course, you know how Twitter is; they just took off after him. I mean, even like Ed Snowden got in on it, Glenn Greenwald got in on it. It's really something to behold.
Yeah, Snowden just said, "Delete your account."
I don't know if anybody knows who Ryan Adams is, kind of an alt-country singer, but he tweeted it out and just told him that he was an asshole.
Yeah.
There was one person that said, "I know your campaign has not worked out so far, Jeb Bush, but you have a lot to live for." I mean, some of these were priceless. Like, somebody photoshopped his handgun and put, "Please clap," on in place of the engraving. So, I mean, it was something else.
It's entertaining. I mean, and some people were like hinting at the fact that, damn, maybe he's suicidal. You know, why is he posting a picture of a gun? You know,
right, exactly.
I mean, as much as suicide isn't something to joke about, I mean, I mean, you can't help but laugh. I mean, this stuff was just ridiculously hilarious. Anyone wanting to brighten their day up, I suggest you head over to the antimedia.org.
Anybody wants to brighten their day up, I suggest you subscribe to Jeb Bush's Twitter account and start looking at everything he does, because it's amazing.
To your point in the article, Claire, it really is. I never in a million years thought I would ever feel sorry for Jeb Bush, but I actually do legitimately. He just looks like a lost little lamb who just doesn't even.
I really did. I kind of winced. Like, gosh, that's really embarrassing. I feel kind of bad for the guy, but he's a Bush.
It's embarrassing to be a damn American seeing this idiot out there making a fool. And
he's trying his best. What do you want from him? What more do you want?
So the funny thing is, though, to us people looking in from the outside, already understanding how damn corrupt and rotten our political system is, and watching his antics. It's funny to us, but unfortunately, you know, you look at him in at these events, he's trying to be funny, I think, half the time. Like, I couldn't tell. When Lindsey Graham said, "How many people here are Republicans?" Everyone in the room raised their hand. Then after that, he's like, "How many who here is a Democrat?" J- Jeb Bush raised his hand. I couldn't tell if he was trying to be funny or not because nobody got the joke. Like, nobody in the room thought it was funny. But for
he did it right away, too. I mean, I think that he did it, like, on a gut reaction, didn't even mean to, and then he tried to be funny.
I agree. Like, he's just precious. I just enjoy it.
On the outside, it's funny, but for people that are taking this shit seriously, I feel bad for them because they don't even get his jokes. His jokes are just awful. I mean,
it's theater. He's awesome. Let's enjoy him. He will be gone soon.
So the best part about it is how Trump can get him to pout.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, Trump
pushes. Trump pushes all his buttons on stage.
Listen, and you can say what you will about Donald Trump, but tell me if you could bring Adolf Hitler back tomorrow just to put him on stage with a Bush to make him look that stupid, because I hate the Bushes so much to make them look that foolish. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It's classic. It's priceless. You know, and the funny thing is that Bush is even less well-groomed than his older brother. And I mean, Bush Sr., I mean, when he was running, he was decent. You know, he had a good message.
The SNL skit with Will Ferrell doing George W., and he gets up there and he's like, "Well, turns out I'm the smart one. Bet you didn't see that curveball coming."
Did you guys see W's just absolutely eloquent, a beautiful, amazing speech in support of Jeb yesterday?
No, I didn't. I missed it.
Oh my God.
Say I missed that.
He really does. I mean, he seriously sounds like a 5-year-old trying to piece sentences together. Like,
yeah.
I forgot how horrible of a public speaker he is, because he's been out of the limelight for a while. And I don't understand what kind of benefit. I guess in South Carolina he's a little bit more popular, but I mean, Jeb's still polling at 4% for South Carolina. So I don't. They should just end the campaign.
No, they don't need to end anything. What needs to happen is after November happens, Jeb Bush needs to continue running for president.
He shouldn't even concede until the end.
I'm just every day of my life. Jake.
He'll concede in 2020.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. So you know, we're gonna go down this technological rabbit hole for the second half of the show. First, I want to go back to Claire because Claire had a great article on this new study on fracking, and it didn't get as much attention as it should have. But a new study has shown that fracking wastewater, which has been leaching into groundwater, drinking water, potable water, I mean the water that people use in their homes and stuff in areas that do a lot of fracking, they're finding out that this stuff is causing cancer.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out also that I just glanced at the article again. They're also using it on crops in California, at least like when there's drought. So, I mean, this is kind of a huge deal. They found that it's carcinogenic, and they tested, they tested mice, like, in a supposedly humane way, but, you know, whatever. And they found that the 6 mice that they tested all developed tumors, all of them, within, like, 4 or 5 months. It didn't even take that long. So this is a huge, huge deal because now they can track, like, the different ingredients in fracking water, which is mostly proprietary information and isn't usually divulged. So this is huge.
Yeah, and this study is like the most recent in a string of studies that have shown, you know, how bad fracking water really is, and they use all these chemicals and stuff. And there's like these, in many states, there's laws in place that you know, these corporations don't have to divulge the chemicals that they're releasing because they're quote unquote industry, you know, secrets and stuff like that, and they're protecting their business interests. So in many places, we don't even know what in the hell they're doing, and we can't even ask them what they're doing because it's a secret, and, you know, it'll give their competitors, you know, unfair advantage and all that.
They don't track where the water goes, either the wastewater or the flowback water. They don't necessarily track where it goes. So it's transported all across the country to be injected into the ground or, you know, put in pits and everything else, and they don't even know where this water is. So it could really be just about anywhere, and if it causes cancer, that's a huge deal.
And there's so many places around the country now that are doing fracking. I mean, the U.S. is now pretty much the largest natural gas producer in the world, and that's largely because of fracking. And on one hand, it's like, oh, that's great, you know, energy independence and all that stuff. But on the other hand, it's like, what's the price that we're having to pay for having a bunch of natural gas? Well, it's a bunch of people that are going to be having cancer and stuff in the very near future, if not already. you know. And so this is a very big study. Fracking has become one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. I don't even know how many people are employed in the industry, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds of thousands of people. And a lot of people make a lot of good money in the fracking industry. I know Halliburton is one of the original people to pioneer the technology.
They're destroying Texas and Oklahoma right now over it.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we're going to be covering that too. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow, sometime this week, about some major major methane leaks that are going on out in Texas. You know, they finally capped off the one in California, at least temporarily. We're still not sure the final results. Hopefully it stopped. I've heard direct sources telling me that people in the area are having less symptoms of methane poisoning and stuff, which is awesome news. Los Angeles has been decimated by this methane leak. And I mean, I can't even tell you how many hundreds of thousands of, if not millions of people have at least been exposed to this this stuff. And thankfully, that's being dealt with as far as we know. But now there's even a bigger one that we're finding out about in Texas that we're going to be covering in the next day or two that you got to keep an eye out for on the antimedia.org. But yeah, I mean, it's once again the science and the technology being used irresponsibly. And, you know, I'm a huge advocate of science. Science is one of my favorite topics. I'm a former biotech major, you know, and I spent a good chunk of my life, my young adult life, studying this stuff. And I think there's a lot of great uses for it, but we have to be very cautious the way we employ technology, man. Technology can be something that really saves us, saves lives. It can save, make us more efficient. It can make things so much better, but at the same time, it can cause so much destruction. Claire, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the warning of Kubrick's 2001: A Space Odyssey, and I think people have forgotten about that film. And I think it's, you know, that's really pertinent now. We've let everything get out of hand because we're hastily implementing science and everything else without really studying it and not doing it responsibly, all for profit, really. So I just think that that's a warning that people should kind of, we should have heeded, and we should start to heed now.
Exactly. And so anyone wanting to read up more on this fracking study, go over to theantimedia.org. And the title is, Here's the New Fracking Study, Here's the New Study the Fracking Industry Doesn't Want You to See. And there's plenty of hyperlinks there. You want to go down the fracking rabbit hole, have at it. But for the second half of the show here, I want to go down this AI, robotics, and all this stuff. You know, this rabbit hole is very deep. And we've been covering it extensively on theantimedia.org. Jake has been doing a great job covering this stuff. We've got two articles up today regarding AI and robotics. The first I'll briefly mention, we may come back to it, is about the NSA has a program literally called Skynet. We learned about it thanks to the Snowden revelations. But basically they're using drones in many places, including Afghanistan, Yemen, Pakistan, and probably a bunch of places that we don't even know about, in Somalia and all the countries that we have covert operations going on. They're using drones that are using metadata. They're using algorithms. They're using heat signatures based on surveillance footage to kill people, to assassinate people. And there's not a human being behind the button pushing it. It's the computer deciding, hey, based on our calculation, based on this algorithm, that person's a terrorist. Therefore, we're going to drop a missile on top of his head. And, you know, unfortunately, the program hasn't been very accurate. A bunch of people, innocent people, in fact, thousands of innocent people are suspected to have been killed by these algorithms. And so, like, Skynet has become a reality. You know, and everyone talks about Skynet. It's like, oh, in the future, Skynet, and all right, Nick, it's going to be like Terminator. This shit is already happening, dude.
Everybody out there, and me, that's an idiot. I'm an idiot. You know, I'm the music guy. I don't see the movies. I haven't seen Terminator. What's Skynet?
Skynet is basically autonomous, you know, robots that, you know, in Terminator, they end up killing people, and it becomes a war between humanity and the robots. You know, and artificial intelligence and stuff like that. Anyway, that's a whole deep rabbit hole to go into. We don't have the author on the line. I can't talk about it too much because I don't know that much about it. But, you know, the gist of it is that they're using drones in the Middle East in Muslim countries, and of course Obama is overseeing this, and Obama is okaying all this stuff. They're using drones that are using computer programs that are killing people, and it's not that accurate. It's killing a bunch of civilians. I mean, if this stuff was perfect and it was only killing the terrorists, I mean, that's one thing. I mean, that's still a question on its own. Should we even be doing that shit? But, you know, the fact that the reality of it is they're not that accurate. They're killing innocent people all the time. There was a case in Afghanistan pretty recently where it was just a farm, and they double tapped a little farm in Afghanistan, and it was just a bunch of kids out there farming in their family farm, and it double tapped. They dropped one bomb, and when the people came out to save the kids, they dropped another bomb on them, and so this stuff is not very accurate. But Jake's got a very interesting article on the anti-media that we published today, and the title of it, there's a 50% chance that a robot will take your job in 20 years. And we've been talking about this on the anti-media for a long time. I think this is probably the single largest issue facing the not only the United States, but the entire world. It's how robots are taking over the entire labor market. Jake, I know you've done a lot of research on this. What can you tell us about this robot takeover of the workforce?
Well, the world's, you know, going to change pretty dramatically in the next couple decades. I mean, think how different the world is now than even the 90s, you know, when people are walking around with basically supercomputers in their pockets and whatnot. But it's going to change even more exponentially as some of this technology increases. And two of the big fields that's going to happen in is artificial intelligence and robotics. Right now, our artificial intelligence is just algorithmic artificial intelligence, you know, like filling in search engines and Siri and stuff like that. But as it gets more advanced, there's going to be more applications for it. And same with robotics. As more and more things are able to be automated, I think it's a pretty good bet that corporations are going to look to save as much money as they can, and so they're going to outsource a lot of jobs to automation. And so there's, you know, estimates out there that 80 million American jobs will be lost within the next 10 to 20 years, which is approximately, you know, 50% of our workforce. And this includes a whole bunch of different things, like, you know, toll booth operators, cashiers, customer service representatives, factory workers, even like financial middlemen. A lot of this, you know, software that's allowing people to kind of do their own finances and whatnot, and even journalists. Nick, you probably saw this. There's now this new algorithmic, you know, technology that allows, you know, basically bots, online bots, to assemble news stories and with pretty good accuracy, and you know, so as this stuff progresses, I think even it'll be possible to even replace, you know, like creative aspects. And I just think that's part of the big, you know, one group called it the fourth industrial revolution, or that's what the World Economic Forum called it. But really, it's just kind of a fundamental, you know, evolution we're about to see of humans kind of outsourcing a lot of what they do to machines. And we're already doing it in terms of pleasure and leisure, but now it's about to, you know, hit the bottom line, and a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. And I don't even pretend to know how this is going to, you know, affect the world at large. I mean, it's
such a huge thing to grapple with. And like I said, I think this is the single largest topic that is facing humanity as a whole. Even Stephen Hawking has warned against, you know, the monopolized power of AI and this advanced robotic technology, you know, and well, I think it was like 1,000 scientists and people that are pretty heavy in the game when it comes to technology, including Elon Musk and other people, warning. They signed onto a letter warning about the monopolized aggregation of this technology and how it can displace humanity in one way or another. And as you mentioned, journalists for the AP are now, you know, some a lot of articles for the AP, the Associated Press, which those not familiar is the single most influential journalistic platform in the entire world, I would say, at least in the United States. They basically dictate the news cycle. Every single mainstream outlet, including Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, you name it, basically takes AP stories and they republish them across their networks. A bunch of the stories at the AP are now already being written by robots, which tells you that our news cycle, in at least a portion of our news cycle right now, a portion of the reality that we know to be real, is being already dictated by robots. I mean, all you got to do is go to the store. You go to Home Depot and they already have self-checkout kiosks. You go to the grocery store and most of the grocery stores now, you can already go and just, you don't have to deal with a human being anymore. You go, you find the stuff you
want.
Thank
God.
Yeah. Right. There's a commercial, I think, I don't know if it was played during the Super Bowl, but it's this pretty big commercial they've been playing on the sports, on the sports events. I think it's esurance.com or something like that. And the guy's like, well, you know, you can get insurance with us and you don't even got to deal with a human unless you want to. But I don't want to deal with a human. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, the predictive programming is already being put out there. It's like, hey, human beings suck. You know, why not just deal with a computer program that or a robot that's not going to give you any attitude or not going to give you an opinion or any bias or anything like that, at least for now. But, you know, this is really, really interesting. I think a lot of the jobs are already being displaced by robotics and by machinery. Like I mentioned, at retail locations and stuff like that. There's a restaurant here in San Diego where when you go in, there's not even a waitress or anything like that. You literally go in and there's an iPad at the table.
That sounds awesome. Let's get real. Look, I don't want anybody losing. I want everybody to be able to provide for themselves. Humans are the worst. I don't want to deal with them. So what's the middleman here? What do you do in the between?
And here's the issue here. There's this great philosopher by the name of Buckminster Fuller, who talked a long time ago. I think this was even I don't know if it was back in the 50s. I think it was where he talked about how, you know, the machines are going to be the savior of humanity. They're going to take care of all the grunt work. Humans are no longer going to have to go out into the fields and farm. We're not going to go have to manufacture. We're not going to have to do all this hard work. And human beings, since the robots are going to take care of all the stuff for us, you know, human beings are going to get to sit back, relax, do work on creative stuff, art, science, how to improve the world and stuff. But I think he had a very utopian outlook on the way things are progressing. And as these 1,000 people that signed on to this letter have warned, the way that things are going, the current trajectory that we're facing is that there's going to be a handful of companies that are going to monopolize over the entire industry of AI and robotics. And we're talking about Amazon, we're talking about Google, you know, we're talking about Apple, and a handful of extremely, you know, enormous companies that have extremely close ties to governments and things like that, that are going to monopolize on all of this technology and stuff like that. Jake, I mean, what are the implications of this?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't really foresee. I can see 10 years from now, and I can sort of see, I think we're going to see a rise in kind of like augmented reality apps. I think a lot of us are going to be overlaying our basic reality with stats and, you know, I think the Google Glass thing in some iteration is going to really take off. I think virtual reality is going to be a big play. I think, you know, androids are, I think sex workers will be replaced by sex bots. I think all, and I think all that stuff is going to happen in the next 20 years. But past that, I simply can't conceive of it. And I guess that's what Ray Kurzweil means by the singularity, the point at which we no longer can predict what's going to happen. You know, we simply don't know what could happen when we create something that has the ability to exponentially expand itself. And when computers are creating better computers, we simply don't know how that kind of exponential growth is going to play, and whether I mean, will AI literally take over the corporate apparatus? I mean, I've written some science fiction about it, but it's science fiction. I don't know in reality how it's going to play out. I will say that I think social justice activism is probably safe. I don't see robots really getting involved in that unless there's kind of some kind of sentient rights movement where they're
you wrote an article.
Stop using us for drone warfare. We don't want to fight your wars. You know, maybe the robots will say that and they'll get involved with activism. And I can't really see a president being an android in the near future. So I think basically if you want to have a job, you should get into social justice or try and run for president.
You wrote an article about an opinion piece back in January about how soon robots will have more rights than human beings. That very interesting article. We can't get into it now because we don't got the time. But anyone want to look at that, go on the anti-media and just search robot rights. And I'm sure you'll find it. SM Gibson has a quick comment. Then I want to get to some of these callers that we have on the line. Go ahead.
Real quick. I mean, speaking of sex bots, I know we got on the line real quick. Our producer from Tuesday and Thursday, Mr. Shannon Madden, would love to get his take on the whole robotic situation and where you think this is going. Shannon, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you right now, I don't have to worry too much about it due to the nature of my trade. So I'm getting there. I do plumbing work for a living. And I don't see a robot being trained to do the skill set that I have to do. Maybe some of the tasks, but not all of the tasks.
Before you go,
go ahead.
Before you go,
it'll take all of it.
They've already got those scopes that they put down there. Those cameras that they put down the pipes to look for the clog, clog blockage and all that stuff.
Yeah, sewer camera.
That's already a little something with that advanced technology seeping into the industry. I mean, just throwing it out there. Go ahead, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, somebody has to run the camera, and then also when they run the camera, they have to diagnose what the problem is and then dig the pipe up and fix it. So, again, that's actually just been an advancement that's made our trade a whole lot easier. And we've actually, been able to help a lot of folks instead of having to dig their whole entire yard up. We can find specifically the part that's broken in the pipe, but it's still necessary for somebody to get in there with the shovel and dig it all up and, you've got machines for that, but there's certain tasks that a machine or a robot's just simply not going to be able to do. That's a very stern reminder for a lot of folks that there's a chance that a robot may take your job. There's other jobs available out there that robots simply can't do, or you can get a job training a robot,
Yeah, and I think a lot of the arguments that are made in favor of this technology is that this stuff is actually going to create more jobs and stuff like that. I think that there are points there. I don't know. We're going to have to find out, I guess, and hopefully we don't find out, in the hard way. I'm going to give our caller from San Diego one last chance to chime in here from 760. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We only got a couple seconds left. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm just actually just hearing you.
All right, cool. Just go ahead and stick on the line. I'm not going to hang up on you. You could listen in. I got a couple other callers. Go ahead.
Well, I think that we can do more to understand the trajectory of this technology by looking in places where we don't ordinarily think to look. If you look at the history of what Bill Gates and people like them invest in and what they quietly but openly invest in and do, then we can better analyze the trajectory of where this is headed. There's so much that we're not remembering to look at that can give us a much more detailed picture. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, and in my opinion, it's looking more and more like a big giant monopoly over top of this technology, and that is very grim prospect for the working class. I mean, all of them, all these laborist jobs, manual labor jobs, are going to be replaced by robots soon. Everyone else is going to be kind of left holding the bag. I mean, what are you going to do? Send people that are in their 40s back to college and have them relearn how to do all this stuff? I mean, that's too much.
TPP is going to do it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, there you go, man. The TPP is coming in. I mean, I don't know if it's going to come in under Obama or come in under the next president.
You know what Beavis and Butthead were on about? The TPP for your bunghole or something like that?
Yeah, and the TPP, it's going to make it so that you can't hack into these and jailbreak these robots and stuff like that. And if you do, you go to jail, and you can't even get those robots to work for you, even if you own them. You know what I mean? And this crazy stuff. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the calls tonight. We're going to be back here live tomorrow, the Anti-Media Radio, at the same place, same time, same call-in number with SM Gibson. I'm still going to be here. Anyone else?
I'm going to let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.